All right, let me put this.
Welcome to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis. Now here's your host, DeAndrew.
Okay, I don't know what that was, but, oh gosh, and I've got an awful echo. Okay, well, let's see, try this anyway. Welcome to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis. Here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, also broadcast live on UPRN 105. Researcher November Hansen. Oh gosh, Joe, this echo is horrible.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Do you have like Pal Talk open or something in the back?
You have to run one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. Okay. Oh, much better. Gosh, it was driving me crazy. Let's try this again. Guest number one, researcher November Hansen, who is the ICAR Oregon State Director and host of Voice of the People, researcher Joe Montalvo, who is the ICAR International Director and host of UFO Undercover radio program, and my husband, David Andrew, who is an independent researcher and the former ICAR Arizona State Director and ICAR Southwest Regional Director. And so what we're going to be doing this evening is having a panel discussion on the questions I asked you in the beginning of the program, the extraterrestrial hypothesis, the extra-dimensional hypothesis, and, for lack of a better term, future humans time traveling. So, ladies first, November, we'll take these different scenarios one at a time. November, what's your opinion of the extraterrestrial hypothesis?
See, I think they're all great. I think they're all researchable. I don't think any of them can be ruled out at this point in time. We have science that shows the possibility of time travel. We have science that shows other dimensions. And, of course, we know about the universe. So I think exploring all those options is imperative.
And, Joe, the same question to you. What do you think of these three hypotheses?
Oh, Lord, it's like putting me on the spot, don't you? actually, right now, everything does need to be researched quite a bit more. It's tough to come to any hard conclusions. You know, it's funny because you and I and Christopher were having basically this conversation before the show, and it's tough for me because I see a lot of information these days. You know, we first started this, and Dee knows we've been doing this for, God, longer than we even want to admit to. You know, we got trickle amount of information, and today there's so much of it. So now I get, you know, X amount to support this, and X amount to support that, and X amount to support this. And I personally don't feel qualified to make a judgment on which one's right, which one's not. It just makes it hard. I think that, you know, everything should be researched thoroughly. But I also, by saying that, I have to say, when we reach certain points with research, we need to say, okay, no, this one is not feasible anymore, or no, this one is not feasible, or this one may be more feasible simply because we have this much more information to back up that scenario, to say. And I do think we're going to have to take a tougher stance on a lot of stuff, but you are already pretty tough on it. I'm fairly tough on it. November is, and David's watching all of our time. So I do feel like, in general, as a group, we're a little more refined and a little stronger, a little stringenter on what we consider to be valid information versus our peers, but still, you know, we still have to research it to discount it, or to count it, either way, I should say.
Okay. Possible. And David, and your opinion of a combination of the three?
Well, you know, I think it could be all of the above. I think there are, what's confusing to a lot of people and also interesting to a lot of people is that in experiences there can be aspects that lend themselves to any of those explanations all in one encounter experience. I've heard many stories where there's things that would make it seem as though whoever these beings are, whatever they are, they're completely physical and in our reality, and yet they do things that seem very unphysical.
Yeah.
So I think all of the above can apply, and all aspects of that should be looked at.
Okay, and I agree on this. All three could be plausible. There was a interesting poll that was done, an online poll that was done for the PBS program Nova on their Origins series. The question that they were asking in this poll was, do aliens exist in the Milky Way? And just to see what, you know, how they had done this, I went through to add my vote to this poll, and they give you 8 options, make up your mind, or 8 times to make up your mind whether you agreed that yes, there were aliens existed, or no, that they existed, or whether you were undecided. And out of over 20,000, it had 20,246 people responding at the time that I got, you know, the statistics from this survey this morning. Out of these 20,000 plus people, 76% said yes, 16% said no, and 8 undecided. Now, to me, that's quite significant. I mean, that's not saying, you know, that question says aliens exist in the Milky Way. With this poll, the statistics from this poll, November, do you think that this would also help to get the idea of UFOs? And, you know, again, I hate this term because it's so broad, but these mysterious objects are piloted by extraterrestrials. Would you think that will help the public make the connection?
Oh, I think all the polls would. I mean, we're such a poll-driven society. You know, when you're doing politics and voting and all that type of stuff, we are so driven by polls as far as influence and how people want to go about making choices on what to do. That's pretty profound. But the polls in the past on the alien subject have all been high percentages that yes, that they're out there, yes, that they're real. You know, sometimes I almost wonder, you know, we have instincts. You know, instincts about various different things. Maybe just instinctively, we know that we're not the only life. Now, that's pretty, you know, I don't know, kind of a strange comment to make, but it almost makes you wonder because those percentages are consistently high. You can even talk to somebody who hasn't had an experience, seen a UFO or whatever. For whatever reason, they inherently feel that there is other life out there, that we're not the only things.
And Joe, on the other side of the coin, do you think this poll is showing that the idea of extraterrestrial life itself is growing and becoming more and more acceptable to the you know, John Q. public?
Well, it does show that there is more desensitization going on, but see, that's the problem here, and this is going to be a big problem for us researchers. We got this going on. Majority of the world does believe there's life other than us. Every poll I've seen for the last decade, from the Roper poll on through the one that the European Space Agency did, the one that the think tank out in New York did, all of them suggest that, yes, as a society, we do believe there's advanced life other than us in the universe. And out of that, half of those people believe that it's even visiting a planet. So that's about 30% of the population believe they're coming here, and 68% believe that they exist. That's way up from when we all got into this, which really makes me happy. But it hasn't changed anything. It hasn't lent pressure to Congress or the president to disclose. It hasn't pushed anyone of any consequence to come forward. So in one aspect, it's a good thing that we're being desensitized to, but I think this shows more that, especially in America, that we are becoming, it's not the fact that we're admitting that E.T. is visiting or we believe in E.T., but we're becoming bombarded by all the media outside and it's desensitizing us to E.T. I think they're trying to limit the impact when there is final disclosure. Because really, truly, it's a nonchalant attitude for a lot of people when you ask them. You know, I ask people all the time, like at the bank the other day, one of the girls asked me when I was going to be on Larry King, and I said, well, whenever he invites me, and now that he's retired, I don't think it'll happen. But I asked him the question, do you think there's an extraterrestrial life? Everyone in the bank, all the tellers agreed, yes, they think there is. Of course, a lot of them said they don't think people are being abducted and so on and so forth, but they immediately said that they thought there were, but it was a very nonchalant attitude. It wasn't like, you know, when you say that there's life in the universe, this should be an eye-opening experience for everyone. I mean, this is saying something about the universe itself, and it's also saying we're not alone. It should really change your overall view and understanding of the universe, and it's not doing that. It's not having that effect. And that, D, is worrying me a little bit, but I'm going to shut up there.
And David, my question to you on this poll, do you think that 20,000 plus people responding to this poll is a significant number of people responding to this that it would reflect on the broader population base?
I would hope that it would. That's a much higher number than I expected, but you know, you'd have to base it on what was the overall audience size during that particular broadcast, you know, and how many of those people that are responding didn't even see the show. They're just looking at the PBS website. But I think it is promising, and some of Joe Buff was really valid. But you got to think about, you know, it's taken the last, 60 years to drag people kicking and screaming just to acknowledging the possibility that aliens or as they might put it, people from another planet in our reality are possible, but like Joe said, the tellers are all like, you know, no, what, people aren't getting abducted though, but there could be aliens, you know, and it's taken 60 years to get to that point. You know, what if some of these beings really are from the future or from another dimension? How much longer will it take to get people to even consider that possibility without rolling their eyes?
Oh, valid point. I hadn't considered that one.
100 years.
Another aspect of this poll, which I thought was interesting, and I thought it was done in a very good way, was once you cast your initial vote, you were asked to go to the next step of this, and it gave pros and cons, so to speak, scientific research on the con side saying, no, this isn't possible, they're, you know, all this, and then you click on the link, the little button to see the pro side of it, and they really gave a really good balanced arguments for both sides concerning like distance, technology, whether or not life evolved on different planets, in evolution and all this. Do you think that showing both sides of the scientific coin, so to speak, was a good thing for them to show to people before they made their final choice, yes, no, I don't know, you know, on the poll answers?
She's offline, I think. She got disconnected.
Oh, okay. I had my... Okay, Joe, how about you? We'll go to you there. Or tell you what, Joe, while you're trying to get November back, I'll direct that to you, David.
Yeah.
Sorry, D, I was watching text in the room.
You gotta repeat it.
Now we got you.
Goes to me, counts on me, and it just didn't work out. Sorry,
okay. Okay. Real brief. On this poll, they showed both sides of the coin, the pro and con. On the possibility of extraterrestrial life. They showed six the six different topics of the possibility of extraterrestrial life. And they were quite balanced. I was pleasantly surprised myself. But do you think that even if people who don't believe, and again, I hate that term, if people don't agree or think that there is extraterrestrial life out there, whether they're visiting or not, showing both sides of the scientific coin, do you think that is a good thing, that it's showing science is looking at both sides?
Somewhat, yeah. You know, there's always going to be people who, you know, no matter what evidence you give them of certain things, they're just not going to go with it, no matter what. Then there's the others that are going to finally give in after being bombarded with a deluge of evidence and information. And there's others who just naturally think outside the box, you know, and everything in between. I hope this thing such as this, and like Leslie Kane's book and all the acknowledgement that it's getting, I hope a lot of this stuff will eventually put this topic where it belongs, and that's in the it's okay to talk about it category.
Interesting. I agree with you there. Like you said, there are people there that no matter what evidence is shown to them, they're not going to believe it. For example, the individual that wrote that BBC article about Rendlesham Forest coming right out and saying, I don't believe in it. There's nothing you could say or show me that could change my mind. There's going to be those stalwart negativists that just hold on to their security blanket, you know, saying, it's not possible. But my opinion there as well. Okay, Joe, how are we doing? We got November back?
Yeah, she's been back with us.
Oh,
yep,
okay.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay, we had locked you there for a moment, so I had to skip you and Joe and go right to David. I don't know if any of you have read Leslie Kane's book yet, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. Leslie and all the writers of this book are not advocating any hypothesis on where these things come from, whether they're extraterrestrial, interdimensional, or future human. They're not espousing any one theory. They're just touting that, you know, that these things are real, they're physical, and whatnot. Do you agree with that, November? Do you agree with that idea of not saying, you know, they're extraterrestrial or whatever, just that these things are real?
Oh, you know, Dee, I think that's a really good way of bringing the topic out further. I don't think people really like to be told what to believe in. I don't think they like to be told what to do. I don't think they like to be told a lot of things. But if you present information, you know, sort of like planting a seed, at some point in time, something may happen, or a family member or something else, and they will go back. And, you know, I just think it's a good way to go about doing things, is to present information as opposed to saying, this is what you need to believe. You need to believe that we're being visited by aliens. You know, when you do something like that, it creates this sort of fear type thing inside. I have not had the opportunity to read her book, but I know it's out there making waves. And it might be for that reason, because it was not presented as, you know, this is it. You know, to add a little bit to that, Dee, I wonder about this whole credibility issue. You have people from the military, you have astronauts, there's been a few senators, couple presidents, that have made comments that would lend credence to this subject. But yet, everybody's still waiting for the person who has the credibility, you know, to bring it alive. And it's already been done. I don't understand why it's not accepted. Anyways, that would be my thoughts on it.
Oh, very good. Very good. I agree with that. And Joe, do you think that it's a bad thing that maybe they didn't, in this book, bring forth one of the the theories or any one of them or all of them?
I've heard a lot about Leslie's book, and actually I shouldn't say Leslie's book, because what she has, 15 collaborators, 14, I forget. There's so many people have interviewed her lately that I actually don't even feel like I need to read the book, which is kind of a shame, because between everybody's interviews, you kind of get quite familiar, and I'm sure there's things I'm missing out by not actually reading it itself, but from what I've heard from everybody, I've heard it's a good book for 101 or 202 for people who are wanting to learn and get into it. It's kind of like Richard Dolan's books on history. They're really good to give people a good feel of what's going on in the field and what kind of stuff you can expect. But it's not taking you anywhere. It's not going to put any force on the government to disclose, and it's not really taking you anywhere. It's not really making the field grow. See, something I've had a problem with in research-wise in ufology in the last 3 or 4 years is I've seen a lot of good stuff coming out, but none of it that's, how can I say this politely, none of us that's, it's not upping the level of ufology. It's either staying status quo or it's slightly even falling some, but it's not, you know, it's not giving us that uplift. It's, well, in other words, when people read this book, somebody that's not, you know, ufology related, because I hate to say it, I don't think that many ufologists are going to actually read the book. But I think for the people who do read the book, they're going to go, okay, well, this is pretty cool, this is kind of interesting, and there's a lot of good stuff here, and there's a lot of things that will lead to other little things, but there's nothing that's going to force disclosure or prove extraterrestrials' existence beyond any reasonable doubt, or even help along the way of alien abduction. So then I have to go back and wonder, what was the book written for? See, I've been having problems with a lot of this stuff lately, because I'm just seeing stuff that you can only challenge the Congress on certain levels, and writing a book isn't going to challenge Congress. That's not going to change anything. And if it helps any public awareness at all, it's a plus. But frankly, for the people like us in the field, no, it's not doing anything for me personally. I can't even see how it's going to change anything in our reality, any shape, form, or fashion. So I'll have to take it as, yeah, it's a good book for starters, and leave it at that. Leslie, I hope you weren't listening.
And David, in her book, she has very, very credible people. We've got fighter pilots who have been out to scrambled to go out and either shoot these things down or chase them away or find out what the heck they are. You've got government officials coming forward with cases that they've dealt with. You have generals and FAA official and all these and what all of them are asking, and what is Leslie Kane is asking in this book, is that the United States government opens up a new investigative body to work openly with civilian researchers and other investigative organizations of governments of other countries. Do you think that this book in any way might influence this?
Honestly, Dee, I don't think so. You know, there's an article that was on the UFO Casebook a few days ago. It was pretty good. I forget the fellow's name that the article was about, but he was friends with Edward Condon. And he read Leslie's book, and he said something there that really stuck in my mind, and it was the fact that, you know, Washington is a place where there are lots of agendas and lots of things that are much more important to those people than the UFO topic and that sort of thing. And he didn't really think it would become any kind of a valid pressure point for anybody there, because all the people involved with this topic are not speaking loudly enough with a unified voice. That's, you know, Joe's mentioned this in the past, and I know Linda mentioned this to me the other night, was the voting block idea. What I do think the book is doing is maybe chipping away a little more at the media to cover the topic in a less giggle factor way, and that's a good thing. But, you know, I'm talking with Frank Warren about the media coverage, you know, and all media coverage is not necessarily good coverage on this topic, because, you know, they still like to throw in their little jabs and stuff, and the topic does need to be taken seriously. I think that's what her book is going to reiterate most is that the topic should be taken seriously. But, you know, again, back to something I said a little while ago, it's taken 50, 60 years for us to get to this point, at least with what you can say and have accepted in the public. And, you know, you look at the Cutler-Twining memo from 1947, and one of the top generals in the Air Force was saying to another top general in this memo that the UFO phenomenon is something real and not visionary or fictitious. In my mind, that tells me, why are people still looking at this as though we have to prove this phenomenon? And we haven't even got to the abduction side of it yet. How long do the rest of those people, and myself and Joe and a few others, have to wait before somebody says, okay, it's all right to talk about that?
Oh, another valid point. That really gets the wheels turning. My notes here. The definition that I've been able to find for the extraterrestrial hypothesis, or the ETH, is the hypothesis that some unidentified flying objects, or UFOs, are best explained as being extraterrestrial life, in other words, the crafts themselves being extraterrestrial life, or space aliens from other planets occupying physical spacecraft visiting the Earth. November, do you agree with that definition?
I agree. It's a real possibility.
Ow.
I have no idea where that came from.
Turn your power talk off. You must have power talk's volume on.
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, it's gone now. Okay, that was weird.
Okay, yeah, I don't know what happened there. And you know what, Dee? I totally forgot what the question was.
I know.
Oh, okay, I remember, you know, are UFOs piloted by extraterrestrials from another place? We haven't really determined what the place would be. Or are the ships themselves possibly life of some kind? I don't see why that couldn't be true. You know, there's been sightings have been happening since the dawn of time. Okay, maybe not that long, but pretty close. And, you know, these strange aerial phenomena have been, you know, reported all throughout history. You only need one, to be extraterrestrial. That's it. Out of all the thousands and thousands that there have been. And it's a fact. So if you think about all the different things that have happened, all the sightings, you know, videos, I mean, there's some really good military videos from Israel chasing UFOs. They're absolutely hilarious. These things are playing games with their jet fighter pilots. And there's a lot of that all over the place. So I don't know what the problem is, except it is a controversial topic. And anytime you take anything that's controversial and you're looking for the dollars to fund the research, you're usually looking at private donations because government agencies, for whatever reason, you know, they just don't seem to want to do that. I don't know if that really answers the question. In my own mind, yes, I believe there's life out there. I have no reason not to believe there's life out there. There is nothing that's ever been written that would make me believe that there's nothing else out there but this, you know, little piece of planet here. It makes sense.
You know what? I'm going to start an award program for anybody who can come up with a word better than believe. Look, I'm going to get everybody to donate $5. I'm going to give somebody like a grand just to come up with this word. I'm sorry, guys. It makes me crazy.
I agree with that. I in fact, even on my website, there's a little, you know, the old I Believe poster, and it has the word believe, or want to believe, and beliefs with a line through them, and it says I know, and with a little band going through it that says UFO research is not a belief system. And I have David to thank for that, because he put that together, and both of us agree with that 100%. So I agree, we need to come up with a different word than believe.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to use, but still. I know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm serious. Y'all write to us. Any one of the four of us, you can write to any of us. We're just looking for a new word. Because for me, it's not about belief. I know beyond any reasonable doubt that they exist and they're visiting the planet. I'm still have no clue what the hell they're really doing here, but I got ideas, but still. I mean, as far as are they visiting, yeah, I know that. I've seen them personally. There's not even a little bit of doubt in my mind that they're here. Am I nuts? Well, I was nuts when I was born, so that doesn't really count, does it? But that's the problem. See, for people like me and Dave and some of the others that are listening to us tonight, there is no believer. This isn't God we're talking about. I'm not looking up and say, like, I believe in God, because I don't know if God really exists or not, but I do believe he exists, so that's true belief. Aliens are different. I mean, come on, they've drugged me out the house by my arms and my hands. That's like saying, do you think the military exists? Yeah, I think they do. So it's not a belief. And even for people who have not had an experience, there's enough evidence out there to either convince you that extraterrestrials are real or not. And granted, from what this earlier conversation, ET may not be the right thing because they could be interdimensional. The future thing I got issues with, not that I don't think it could happen, it's just I got this thing in my head every time they come back, it creates a new future reality. So for them, not for us, but for them, it would be kind of like one minute they might like be like kings and next minute be like ants. It could be really like really playing Russian roulette for them. So that one I have a little less, but dimensional beings that exist in our own time and space, extraterrestrials, all of them, I think, are quite possible. I'm just curious to which one it really actually is. But are they here and visiting? Yeah, they're here and visiting.
Okay, it sounds to me like somebody's playing.
All right, who's typing?
Drones.
Somebody typing.
David, the one statement in this definition for the ETH, the possibility that the craft, and I'm going to use the term craft loosely in this instance, that the crafts themselves are extraterrestrial life. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, you know, Dee, they found certain base elements just free-floating in space. They've also found, I believe, in certain nebula that they have the possibility of actually having protein strands floating loose in space. Now, I could be wrong on that, but I know that there was something that was just really incredible like that they discovered recently. So, you know, just the possibility of life itself, I think, is much higher than we think. And, you know, sometimes I think humanity has a secret narcissistic need. You know, we have to be the center of it all, because if we're not, then that just kind of messes with our view of everything. And some people can't handle that. But, you know, there's no rule that says there aren't galaxies older than ours. There's no rule that says there aren't parts of the universe that aren't much older than this part of the universe where life might have started first. You know, the possibilities are just endless. I think there's been more than enough time somewhere in the universe, maybe even closer by than we think, for life to have evolved into a sentient state.
Okay. The next hypothesis, definition, next dimensional hypothesis. The definition for this one is a theory advanced by Jacques Vallée that unidentified flying objects and related events involve visitations from other realities or dimensions that coexist separately alongside our own. Do you agree with that one, November?
I agree it's a possibility. I think our science in that area is just... it's almost pre-science. We're just starting to grasp the idea of multiple universes, of other dimensions, those types of things. You know, getting to the point where we know what they look like, we know if life is contained within them, you know, I think we have a ways to go. It's an absolutely fascinating subject, though. It is a fairly new science as far as getting down to the nuts and bolts of it, not just making the statement that there's multiple universes and other dimensions, but really getting into it to see what it looks like. Or what it could look like. And then there's the math. So if life also exists in other dimensions or, you know, or alternate universes, yeah, why? I mean, we're curious in nature. I would tend to think that other life forms out there would probably have that same curiosity. So why not? Why does it have to be one or the other? You know, why can't we have multiple things going on? We're such a black and white society. It either is or is not. It has to be this or it has to be that. When you're talking about this subject, you're talking about the dimensions, you're talking about the time travel, you're talking about other planets, why does it only have to be one? I mean, you could be looking at a whole multitude of different things going on.
Oh, that's what we're here to discuss. We're going through all of the parameters of the different theories, and right. and trying to determine if it's one or two or all of the above.
If I would have. Yeah, I understand. Well, the dimensional one, sure. I have no reason, you know, I haven't seen anybody say it's not possible. Mathematically, they haven't shown me with a cute little equation that says, no, it can never happen. So I'm with the all. I've been with the all since the beginning. So,
okay. And Joe, since I know you have interviewed Michio Kaku, and here recently he went on television on MSNBC and even discussed the possibility of extra-dimensional life. Do you agree with his viewpoints of this possibility?
Well, who the hell am I to argue with Michio Kaku? I got to say, by the way, he was an excellent interview. I agree with a lot of what he says. I mean, we got into that on my show. We actually talked about that. And I got to say, at the break, he actually asked me a few questions. I was surprised. Even on the air, he asked me a few questions. Because remember, I was supposed to be interviewing him. And I was very surprised. So I agree with him on a lot of – I think there's more than 11 dimensions. I think that's where him and I part on that. But I think even he knows that. He just doesn't want to say it because I've noticed a couple times, you know, when people kind of put him in a corner about it, he's kind of like, well, yeah, so – you know, and we've talked about life. You know, we introduced the stepping stone theory with him on the show that day, and he was floored by it. So even I don't think for him it's a big if issue if there's life, and I don't think there's a big issue for him if there's dimensional life. We pretty much understand that there could be multiple dimensions all existing at the same time and space with us. It's not that far. You know, it's something that always amazes me about humans. There's a lot of things that we expect as humans. We expect to find life. If you go out and poll the planet again right now, 70% of people are going to say we expect to find life out there, probably even 90%. We expect that there's going to be other dimensions because, frankly, we live in how many dimensions now? So I think in one aspect we expect that, and I think we're going to find most of these. So for someone like him or like Hawkins or anybody who has an advanced understanding of how the universe works, I think they see these things. But then they're kind of bound like everybody else on the planet. How much can they actually say and still keep credibility? That's a fine line that he's walking right there with the, you know, when he talks about it. Because, you know, he was invited to speak at the X conference and turned it down. So I know that for a fact. So he's walking a fine line. But I do agree with a lot of his theories. And I think more than anything else, he is really a shining light out there because he is a theoretical physicist. Considered to be a very brilliant one, and he is talking about extraterrestrials. That alone should help people like us out, but I don't know if it is. There's this thing, and when I heard Dave talking around, I was thinking about it. It's just this. There's this numbness. You know, people it's like we got to have so much we're numb now, and it's like they know. And want and feel and expect and want to go out there and explore the universe. When you ask people, they want to go do it, but yet they're kind of very nonchalant about aliens. It's kind of weirded me out lately, I got to tell you. It's one of these things that's been bugging me, but I'm going to shut up because it has been. It's been bugging the hell out of me.
And David, in the last few days before the program tonight, you and I have discussed these issues. And you said something to me today that made me go, interesting point. And that was the fact that our space tracking systems have found stuff coming in from deep space to Earth. I you can elaborate better on the detail than I can because you read the stuff and I didn't. But you also come up with other examples of you know, possibility of extraterrestrial or interdimensional in that line. Could you bring some of that to us?
Yeah, it would be, you know, this is where it really gets hard for those looking at the topic from the non-experiencer point of view, but it's still just as hard for the rest of us who are looking at it from the experiencer side. You know, and like you just stated, you know, we've all heard those stories of, you know, people from NORAD or somebody saying they're tracking what they call a fast walker, but they came in from deep space. Now, if it was a dimensional thing, I would think just out of convenience they would pop up much closer to Earth instead of traveling across the solar system. You know, maybe that's just me. But then there's other aspects of, you know, one of the species of ET that I've encountered personally, they actually do things like use the door. You know, does a dimensional being really need to use a doorknob and open the door to come into a room? But then again, you have other species that, and you've heard reports of, that ETs came through the damn wall, and then they reached out and touched you. You know, so does going through the wall mean they're extra dimensional? And what about the fact that they reached out and touched you? Can somebody from another dimension really do that? You know, or are they using some kind of technology on the wall? You know, there's so many aspects that point to all of the above that it does get very confusing as to what, you know, truly can we point to with these little explanations.
Valid points. Again, you guys are coming up with some really good stuff tonight, and I appreciate this. And unfortunately, I couldn't find any definite definition of the future human theory, but I'm just going to word it in my own. The way I am understanding the future human theory is that it is humans from far into our human history and forward coming back and either trying to fix something that's gone wrong, or maybe just anthropologists coming to this world to figure out what the heck we're doing because they lost the history this far back, or for whatever reason. Is this something that you can agree with, November?
Absolutely. And I would go with just who we are today. I mean, we're going to change in the future. 1,000 years from now, 100,000 years, we are going to change. But I do think there will be some things that will still be inherent with us, and that is, can you think of anybody on the planet that would not turn down an opportunity to view an event from the past as it really happened? I mean, you can record things, you can take pictures of things, you can have audio, video, but it's not the same as actually being there. You know, walk with the dinosaur, even if you can't be there physically, because I know that there's some theory and time travel that we could actually go back in time, but we couldn't actually do it from a solid point, that we would actually be almost like a ghost, but we would be able to witness, you know, what was happening in time. I would think future humans would want to do it just as much as humans today. I don't know why that would change, so absolutely I think that's a possibility.
It sounds to me like you're trying to describe something that would go along the lines of the grandfather paradox.
See, but I think if time travel is possible, and I know there's, and I don't remember who the scientist is, I apologize. I know there's at least one scientist that said if we could go back in time, it would be in the form of information. So we wouldn't actually be, you know, flesh and blood living that event in time. It would only be an observer. That's how we could go back in time, an observer gathering information. So we wouldn't be interacting with what's happening in history. So we couldn't, there would be no paradox. We wouldn't be creating that paradox. And for whatever reason, that makes a great deal of sense to me, to be able to witness it, but not necessarily experience it.
Wow.
Back in time, and meet your grandfather, and tell your grandfather, do something to prevent your grandfather from meeting and getting married and having kids. You existing. That happened, then. How did you go back in time to prevent your grandparents, your grandparents from meeting? basically that's the grandfather. November was saying you can only go back and observe. You can't physically interact with what is going on. If I'm understanding you correctly, November.
I'm not saying that that's not possible, too. I'm just saying by what I have read on theory of time travel, that's the one that seems the most plausible to me, in my opinion, is the observer.
Okay. And Joe, I had my question. I'll do that. In the future human theory, there are people who believe, in the course of the future human theory, that what we know of as I'm hearing a lot of noise.
That was David's mic's just kind of hot.
That was me. I apologize.
Oh, that was you. I thought that was David. Oh, that's weird.
David's sitting at his computer. Anyway, what I was going to ask you is there are a lot of people out there who are proponents of the future human theory that believe, I'll just use that term for lack of a better term, that believe that these grays are the future evolution of humans. Is that a theory that you can agree on, or do you disagree with it?
Ooh, that's a tough one because, I've looked at that theory quite often, to be honest with you, because, I'm always looking for evidence that'll support it, that the grays are us in the future. But then there's some fundamental things that I have to look at. I mean, we have roughly 5 million years of evolution that we think we can prove on Earth. So they would have to be 50, 60, maybe 100 million years in our future. If we go that far, I guess anything's possible. But then again, how do we know if they are our future that them coming back is not what caused them to be the gray? By interfering in our past, it caused them to become what they became. So it gets real iffy up in there because, frankly, from every major physicist I've ever talked to, and I've talked to 5 of them on the air, when you step out of your time zone, you no longer exist there. So, yes, you may be able to affect change, but not on your own timeline. It's on someone else's timeline. So it gets really, really strange and screwy there because you're not really affecting your own timeline because you're no longer there. You've moved on. And what's weird about that is there can actually be 2 of you in one timeline, which, of course, is a paradox in itself. That's why, I don't know, time travel is a very iffy thing, and so I got kind of issues with the overall. See, I kind of agree with Demi. I think they could travel back, not so much in a corporeal form, maybe as a hologram or some type of image. They might be able to come back. They may even be able to interact in some shape, form, or fashion if they could present themselves that way. But I don't know. But as far as them just traveling, based on what I know about physics today, I'd have to say no. But also, I have to be honest. We really are lacking in physics. So at this point, I'll say no, but 5 years from now or 50 years from now may totally change that because, frankly, our knowledge of physics is limited today. But on our current understanding, I just don't see how they could do it.
Okay.
Fine. Yes.
And, David, this is something that you and I have discussed many times. Another theory of these future humans coming back in time is to fix something. And you have an opinion on that, and I'd like everybody to hear that if you don't mind.
You lost me, sorry. I lost the question. I'm paying attention, sorry.
Okay, I'll repeat the question.
Thank you.
You and I have discussed this several times. And you have a feeling that, let me break it, start over again. There is a theory that these future humans are coming here to fix something, that there's something wrong that they're trying to fix. And you have a theory of it yourself. And I was just wondering if you would care to share that idea with us and everybody else listening. Did you lose me again, David?
Sorry, sorry. I'm not sure what you're talking about, Dave. I don't have a theory about
that there's something wrong with them that they're trying to fix.
Okay, well, see, you're tying two things together here. I don't think they're coming from the future to do that. Okay. You lost me. I'm sorry. Go move on to something else.
Okay. Okay, then. Let's see. We've got, a little over 6 minutes before we go to the break. Before we go to the break, is there anybody else that wants to make any kind of a statement about the three theories? Well, actually, four theories that it's a possible all of the above before we go to break?
Well, I'll jump in. I think
okay.
To rule anything out would be wrong. We don't have enough. I don't know. We're so new into this. I mean, it's fascinating just to talk about it. And I have a feeling nobody's hearing me because I just noticed something got dropped.
No, I hear you fine.
I hear you.
Okay. For some reason, it seems like I lost somebody. I'm sorry. It's a fascinating subject. We got to keep going with it. Everything needs to be left on the table until it can be taken off. I mean, there's different ways to go about research. You can focus on one single thing and focus on that, proving that one single thing, or you can put all the things on the table and do process of elimination. In this particular subject, because there are so many different ideas and so many possibilities, I think the process of elimination would be a lot easier with putting one item on a table and solely focusing on that. You know, I think they're all great theories. I think people should just keep going with them. You know, Dee had talked about Michio Kaku. What really impressed me about him is how he started thinking about other dimensions. When he was a little boy, there's an article, he wrote it. When he was a little boy, he would look into a koi pond, and he would wonder what the fish were trying to perceive looking out. That's kind of what he wrote about in a nutshell. It's a little more complicated than that. And I thought, that's so, it is profound, because if you really stop to think about it, I mean, the possibilities are just amazing. Anyways, so somebody else go.
Can I say something real quick? I apologize to you for not being able to answer your question earlier. We talked about so many things this afternoon. I got a head full of stuff that's going, and I apologize.
Okay.
I love it when my wife and I get to talk shop, but, you know, sometimes we cover so many subjects. And
David?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the question that Dee was asking earlier, I did actually write about that, so maybe as a possibility. I mean, it's not even, some of these things you can't even really present as a theory because you haven't figured out how you're going to test it. It's more of an idea. So I had actually written about that, the idea of future human coming back to try to correct a genetic problem. If our race was faced with total, you know, annihilation, they were going to become extinct, and it was a genetic reason. And they had the possibility to send somebody back to get whatever genetic material that they needed to make those repairs, I would think we would do it. It would be that, you know, will to survive type of thing, even if we were going to risk changing the past. If you're going to risk changing the past or if you're going to become extinct, you know, which option are you going to take? I think they would do that. I don't know that there's any particular evidence out there or ideas that would, you know, that would lend somebody to believe something like that. But just through the thought process of thinking about, okay, you got future humans, why would they come back here? That is one possibility.
Well, I have talked to two separate contactees, and both of them said straight up that, let me backtrack. One said straight up that he was told that they were future humans traveling back in time. The other one, she told me that they were future humans here trying to fix something. She wasn't sure what it was, just that they were here to fix something.
Dee, can I jump in and say something, please? You know, when you use the term they, who is they, the future humans, but which species, or is it more than one? And if so, then why do future humans look so different in so many different species? You know what I'm saying? The time traveler possibility is plausible, but I don't think all of these beings coming here can be future humans, you know, unless we've evolved into a bunch of other branch species.
David, can I address that real quick? On MSNBC, a group of scientists got together, and they postulated what future humans would look like, and they actually presented exactly that, that the human race will fracture off into two, three, four multiple species that will look so completely different than what we look today. And so that really could be a possibility. I don't think that that's the answer, David, but I do think that it is a possibility just because, you know, you're talking about evolution and how things split off. So that does kind of make sense. I've never read Dan Barish.
Well, that is interesting, November. I didn't know that. But then again, you bring up an interesting side question here. What happens if you know, we're 10,000 years down the road, and how many different planets have we possibly colonized by then? And what are the effects of the environment of space travel and those other planets on our evolution as we move outward into space? I guess it is quite feasible that we could turn into something else just because of the environment.
Okay, here's another idea before we go to a break. Is what if some of these future humans were intentionally genetically altered to be able to survive on another planet? On that note, we need to head for a break, and we'll be back here in 8 to 9 minutes with Eye to the Sky, the UFO synopsis, and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Clear.
I hear music in Chihuahuas.
Hey, Jimmy coughing and me coughing.
Hey, guys, I don't know about the rest of you. The only time I'm hearing any weird noise is when November starts to speak.
Yeah.
November, do you have the room muted? Hello?
I think she left the mic. It's got to be feedback, because at first I thought it was coming from your phone, but then Dee said something and I heard you, and you were solid. It's like the mic's picking up the headset or something.
Yeah, we've got the speakers off here. I've got the room muted, so there should be no way the audio's coming back through a loop here.
My
phone and Dee's headset. On the other side of the room.
No, I think it's November's headset's picking something up.
I'm not using a headset, Joe. I'm using the mic.
Somewhere it's picking up audio. I don't know. That's just fucking weird.
And I keep hearing one of the three of you typing through the headset.
You know it ain't me typing, so.
Okay, you know what? That would have to be me. This mic is so funky. So I will quit typing. Try something else.
Oh, so that's what the funky, you know, out of rhythm drum beat I was hearing.
Yeah, it's typing.
Well, I hadn't typed that much, so you could, okay, well, then I know when I'm using a Skype, I'm not going to be able to type.
I'm just going to have to get you a headset.
That's why I keep teasing David, that he's, you know, put down in the key so damn hard. No, that's not what I wanted.
I just would agree with K. Jules. I would bet on any given Friday or Saturday night more kisses begin with Miller. What? The guy is I'm sorry, guys. This guy Malone, some shit on Facebook just popped up while I was watching.
Guy Malone,
anyway. I posted a new question today. I'm waiting to see what the answers are.
I know that I'm hearing the music much louder than I am you.
Oh, that's weird. I wonder why. Yeah, but when I turn it off, I can't hear you for some reason. I don't know what's up with that. It's not supposed to do that. Skype's kind of took over part of the mixer for some reason or another. It's weird. Sometimes on some of the older computers, well, even on some of the new computers, sometimes you got to take it off a wave and put it just on mic. It picks up audio from somewhere. It's weird. But I like it. It's a good system. Yes, yeah, Steven. I'm glad you're online. IM me later. it's a good system, though. It works well. It's got it takes a little getting used to. There's a little touch bit of lag in it, but it works pretty good. I've done it with 8 people so far. So, you know, we can do panels up to at least 8. We've already done that. I'm going to write to Skype and see if there's a way to get more weekly hours. Because really and truly, because we have such a good internet connection and good computers, we could run Skype most of the time. If they would give us the time, because let's see, on like tonight we would need, on an average Saturday night, we would need, 12 hours. 14 hours is what we need on an average Friday night. And that's just with the regular host and guest on each show. It's kind of strange. Yeah, because everybody goes, oh, it's only a 2-hour show, but no, not really. It's a 4-hour show, there's 2 people. As far as Skype's concerned, it's 4 hours, not 2. Yeah. Yeah, not about a... If they did about a conference call, that would be different. Now, then it would only be 2 hours per conference call, but that's just how they do it. But when, like, me, you, and Demi, they don't count that. That's absolutely free. You can use that as long as you want and as often as you want. So for the host now, most of the hosts can just use Skype, and we can call the guests via the Skype phone system. But still, that still limits us, though. That sucks. Oh, man, we got a bunch of mediums one on the network. I got to go listen to all these psychic medium shows. I'll be insane next week, y'all. I promise. I got to put one on the show. I'm getting a lot of people write to me about it. And I got to put one on the network somewhere. And we got, what's her name? The tinfoil lady? Dr. Rita Lewis. She's been on the network for about a year now. She does real well. Yeah, the nutcase. She's a... Yeah, that's her with the tinfoil hat on at Roswell. That's her. She's she would have never got a network, but she's got a highly... She's got a well-rated show. And,
join us. Welcome to Eye to the Sky, the UFO synopsis. Now here's your host, DeAndrew.
And welcome back to Eye to the Sky, the UFO synopsis here in the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, also broadcast live on UPRN 105.5 New Orleans. I'm your host, DeAndrew, and I'd like to welcome back my guests tonight, November Hansen, Joe Montaldo, and my husband, David Andrew. I also need to tell Joe, I'm hearing an echo again, and it's not from my end this time. I think it's still getting the stuff from the server.
What is that? Okay, what was that? We good? No more of that, huh?
Oh, you're echoing really bad, Joe.
Am I? Hold on, let's see if we can do something about that.
I don't know whether it's just on my side or everybody else is hearing this. Not sure. But at least it's not as loud as it was when they forgot to mute cows off. Anyway, as we were discussing tonight in this panel discussion, we were discussing the extraterrestrial hypothesis, the extra-dimensional hypothesis, and the future traveler hypothesis, or future human hypothesis. Yeah, I think I'm going to give first order this time because we had started with David. Now you're echoing a little.
Sorry.
That's all right. It's not your fault. And they're saying that I'm low, so I'm going to speak up a little bit louder here. How's that? Can you give us an example of what you think is a good evidence of the extraterrestrial hypothesis?
Well, you know, a lot of that does depend on what can someone or something that's extra-dimensional, how can they affect things in this reality, or can they? But as far as if we're just going to take it as this is ET, they're from another planet, they're from this reality, then, you know, things like our radar tracings when they pick up a craft, people actually seeing the beings, being touched by the beings, you know, trace evidence left on the ground from some UFO landings and that sort of thing. But also there's the aspect of abductions to me that lends itself a little bit to the extraterrestrial hypothesis, and that's the fact that, you know, of the medical exams, sometimes they take genetic samples. You know, what would somebody from another dimension want with that? I mean, yeah, a scientist might want to collect such things, but I don't know. Just somehow in my mind, that seems to lend itself a little more to the extraterrestrial hypothesis, just some of their actions during abductions.
Okay, Joe, this is horrible. I can't understand what anybody is saying right now because of the echo is so bad.
Where in the world is the echo coming from? Guys, can y'all hear echo in the virtual auditorium? Because I hear David and everybody excellent. That's why I was asking. Yeah, I don't know what that is.
There's no echo here.
Yeah.
No echo here either.
And it's something feeding back on D's. I don't know what
D,
it could be.
D. D, yes. when you rebooted the room, get you mooted.
Right, I'm sorry. My bad. It was me. I forgot, you know.
There we go.
Just bear with us, guys. We're experimenting tonight too, so don't you just.
And for those of you who are Skype pros, this is my first time on Skype, and every 60 minutes, Pal Talk boots me out, and I have to restart everything, and I forgot to mute it. So again, my bad. I apologize. But it's much better. Sorry about complaining to you, Joe.
That's
when
okay.
I apologize.
That's all.
Okay. David, again, I'm sorry because I couldn't understand what you were saying over the horrible echo hearing, but I'm sure our guests did, and I apologize for not being able to understand what you were saying. So, Joe, I'm gonna give you the hard one.
Good.
Could you give since you know do a lot of abduction research, in your research, have you ever come across a good example of a possible future human event?
You know, man, she brought that up. Going to put me on the spot because now I'm going to have to tell them about this and people will be writing to me, oh, see, that really is true. Actually, I've got a few cases that early on made me think that, yes, this was something from the future. And now, let me to put this in retrospect, people. I was younger when these cases came in. And I did not understand what I understand about physics today, but there was something about the cases that suggested these extraterrestrials, or at least, I shouldn't say these extraterrestrials, but at least the 3-foot grays may have been from the future. Now, what made it more interesting is that we think one of the grays, one of the types of the 3-foot grays, because we think there's more than one type of 3-foot grays, happens to be a cyborg, which would be partly alive and partly machine. That's the ones they actually were saying were actually from the future. But the actual other grays were actually physically from our reality and our dimension, even though they had the ability to cross dimensions or physically from ours. There were a couple of really good cases that suggested that. Now, the other thing that's weird is I haven't seen any cases like those. What is this, 2000? Since 2000, that was the last time I had seen one. I got to tell you that the last two cases I had, the witnesses were impeccable. They had been polygraphed, they passed, voice dressed, they passed. They had nothing to gain from this. They weren't writing any books, they're not doing any public speaking. They didn't even want to go public with it. They just wanted to relay the information. So those cases are hard to refute, but then again, I also know ET lies and could have been taken advantage of their gullibleness. But I don't know. Those cases did make me wonder. I have to be honest. So those I want to say probably 10 or 12 cases that really made me stop and think maybe is part of this being controlled from a future source by some means. Not so much that the Greys are actually our descendants, or they could be, but it's the fact that they may be controlling us like a long distance phone call in another way. And then somebody suggested, no idea how possible this is, somebody suggested that maybe that if you physically kept the Grey in the future, keeping the Grey's body in the future, and you only transported their essence back to like one of those automaton machines in the past, then it wouldn't adversely take them out of the timeline, meaning that they could travel between timelines without adversely moving out of it. So when they did create a change back here, that it would actually affect future timelines. Guys, this is all speculation, by the way, before I start getting emails about this. I don't know. The witnesses were good. But still, more of our cases suggest that this is a real live physical event that's happening right now by aliens in our own galactic plane, in our own galactic existence, in our own dimension. That's what the overall majority evidence suggests. But then again, there is this little piece, and it will stay in the back of my mind until either it's proven to be completely false or completely true. So that's about as far as I can go with that without giving away any of my names or anything. They're good cases. They really were.
Hey, David, you had said you wanted to throw something else out there.
Maybe relevant here. A person's perspective of time is from just that. Their point in time, their perspective of time is from their viewpoint, from where they're at in it. And if you could learn to move outside that just a little bit, then to that person in that fixed point in time, those people would seem to be time travelers. It doesn't necessarily mean they have to be from the future.
It's true.
That makes sense.
In other words, you're suggesting they may be from the past?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying if I could find a way to pop out of this reality, phase out with it, maybe time for me would travel slower or faster, and then I pop back in this reality right next to you. Maybe 5 minutes have passed for you, but for me it was only 30 seconds. It might seem like I was a time traveler to you, even though you and I started from the same point.
Dee, that's a good point for some of ICAR's research, because we do think today at least some of the Greys have the ability to pull you out of the dimension where hours may pass. Here, when they put you back, only about 10 minutes or so have actually passed. Or sometimes you even gain 5 or 10 minutes. That one still freaks me out. So that's actually a good point, Dave, because it is one of the things we look at now for abduction criteria.
Okay, and not to leave November out. And I saved this one for you, November, because of
her head's
nothing
too
else.
Big now.
Your Pal Talk nickname, which everybody by now knows that it's the dimensional star. that's why I saved this one for you. And can you give us some kind of an example of an incident or a case that could possibly show that it was interdimensional?
Oh, wow. Why don't you put me on the spot? So I think it's no real big secret that I did a book, a free book, a totally, you can't even call it a hypothesis. It's ideas just based on a collection of information. Are they directions that maybe we could be going? So looking at the idea of dimensions, which actually I'm going to end up repeating some of what Joe said, where you have people that have reported variations in time. If I understand what we understand about science correctly, and you get into hyperspace, a different dimension, that type of thing, time would vary from the point where you were taken out of it and that you're put back in. It could be feeling like you're partially in the past, move back into the present, vice versa, that type of thing. There are a lot of cases where people have reported feeling drawn into a different environment. Now, some people report that as a spacecraft. it was really interesting, though, when you asked them specifically, were they drawn into a craft? They really don't know. From their perception or what they know about the subject, they believe that they were drawn into a craft. Maybe they were simply drawn into hyperspace. So I think there's some very real possibilities there. I think it's really intriguing. There's a lot of different research on it. There's a lot of different research on one of my favorite ones is the vision of a peacock and how the peacock sees its environment. It is believed it sees it in a four-dimensional aspect as opposed to three-dimensional. And then, of course, they do all their little computer-generated type things on, you know, transferring what they're seeing as opposed to what we're seeing. It's all fascinating stuff.
Hey,
so, if the question is, you know, is there a possibility that there's something dimensional going on? I would think yes. And if you just really stop and think about it, for whatever reason, it can make sense. That, I guess that's what I'm looking at. And, of course, what makes sense to one person may not to somebody else. But when I'm reading the science, when I'm looking at the research, when I'm listening to the people tell their experiences, it's like, okay, so what could make sense? I don't think we're to the point of actually proving a whole lot of anything, but we can look at things that do that could make sense and then take it from there. I don't know if that really answered your question, but sometimes I get off on a tangent. Forget what the question was.
Oh, that's no problem. And again, David, you said something else you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, if you guys will indulge me here for a second, I'd like to share an experience that happened to one of my other family members. And, you know, you be the judge. Was it ET or was it extra-dimensional? A person told me, one of my family members, that they woke up and there was the outside wall of their house, which is actually upstairs. It's a two-story house. This wall is straight up and down. There's no balcony or anything like that. And looking at the outside wall, he could see the inside of their ship, if you will. They started leading them towards the ship. We turned around and looked and saw my mom laying in bed. So he was viewing both things, but yet, and then the neighbors reported a UFO embedded in their house, and the wall was no longer there, the outside wall. It was just a smooth blending of their room to the ship. So, you know, was that a dimensional portal, or did they just phase slightly enough out of this reality that they could do that? You know, I don't know, but what does that scenario, you know, does it indicate anything?
Valid point. Just on a side tidbit, I thought it was kind of funny that one of your family members told us about waking up during the night to see an ET standing there in their bedroom looking at their cell phone, and then looked over their shoulder at your family member, and then looked back at the phone and set the phone back down and disappeared.
Yeah. Just another odd aspect of contact, I guess.
You know, were they able to physically phase in and out, you know, their individual being, or what? You know, if that could be another indication of a interdimensional visitation. Okay, as a collective, okay, I think we've come to an agreement that all three of these hypotheses have valid points. Can we agree that, you know, and I guess we pretty much agree that not all visitations are extra-dimensional or extraterrestrial or future human. Am I correct? Whoever wants to jump in there?
Oh, I agree. Oftentimes when we're talking about abductions or contact, immediately the person is going to see this little three-foot being, that's what we're discussing. But I think people forget out there is that there is a multitude of things that are reported. There's a reptilian experience that's reported, a light being experiences that was reported, a human-type experiences that reported, and those experiences in themselves are inherently very similar to each other. Then you look at the broader range, you have all of it, even that in itself also has its similarities to it. So the subject really does become complicated, because realistically, when you're talking about abductions, contacts, and how these things are possible, is it, you know, the interdimensional, the time traveler, the whatever, I think the majority of people are going to assume that you're discussing these three-foot grays, because in our society, that's predominantly what's out there, what's in the media, that type of thing. But the reality is that if you listen to people talk about their experiences, there is a wide range. It's not necessarily a three-foot gray. You know, there's, I already said what the other types were. Somebody else can add to that.
Something I think David might be able to add to that concerning the, what you call the little blue guys. When, you know, when you told me about when pulling a drawer open.
Okay. Now there's something that I was told by a family member, and maybe 10 years later, I read almost the same exact tale story in one of Whitley Strieber's books. Now I know for a fact that the person who told me that had never read any of Whitley Strieber's books, and it really gave me goosebumps. And this thing that I was told was that they took this person down a hallway, these little short blue ETs that we've encountered, and there was, I guess, what you would describe as a chest of drawers type thing built into the wall. The two blue guys that were with this person opened the door for these drawers, and there was one of the little blue guys inside of there, as if it was in sort of a stasis. And this person told me they got the impression that they used this body or container, as you will, if you will, as we might use a diving suit to go underwater. We can't survive underwater without assistance. And that just, you know, it made my head spin. It's like, what kind of a being can step in and out of a physical body? Are they physical? Are they ET? Or are they something else, and they just know how to adapt biology in some way, about, you know, biomechanical or something? As what Joe talked about, the you know, automaton types. Are these beings really possibly non-corporeal, but they know how to use a corporeal methodology to interact with us?
That's a good point. It's light beings, right?
Okay, well, Joe, on the, since you bring up the light beings, what do you think these light beings might be? You know, are they dimensional or what?
That's a damn good question. I don't know. You know, when it comes to the light beings, and I was picking on David because we've talked about the light beings before. All contactees describe them the same way. It's interesting. They can look like us, or they can look like a little ball of light, or actually kind of a big ball of light. They seem to be able to travel in space and time without spaceships. I'd have to think there's some kind of mind over matter, or matter over mind, or a combination of plasma, matter, and energy and thought. I don't know what they are, but whatever they are, they seem to be much more advanced than any of the corporeal type races visiting the planet. Actually, from what I can see, it's the only thing the grays actually look like they even fear. And I'm not sure if it's a fear of some kind of weird admiration. It's a strange phenomenon. But they're the only ones, by the way, while we're on this, they're the only ones I could think that, you know, what people would call shape-shifting. Maybe they can, because they do. You know, maybe it's not energy. It might just be pure light. It's hard to say, since none of us have actually touched one. You know, we're assuming it's energy, which is a bad thing to assume anything. But that's what everybody calls them, energy beings, because they seem to be some type of energy that can transform. But the reason I'm saying that is because people always tell me about the reptilians or the grays or the humans transforming. I'm going to say this again for the 1,500,000th time. The grays, reptilians, and the humans do not transform. They're solid, just like they can't transform any better than you can. Okay, they just can't. They
those,
can.
Those referring to the term shapeshifters.
Shapeshifters. Right? I'm glad you said that. Thank
clarify
you,
that.
I'm glad David said that. But he's right, because the shapeshifters, everybody's always saying that the reptilians can shapeshift, and the humans can shapeshift, and the grays can shapeshift, and they can't. They can make you think they can, but they don't actually physically change anything. But the light beings, supposedly, which I got to say, I've never seen one personally do it myself. The only thing I might even consider seeing a light being is we've seen a large sphere of energy that seemed to react to what we were doing. But as far as everyone says who have seen them up close and personal, they can pretty much take any shape or form that they want. Most people describe them as like pure matter, pure energy, a combination of energy, matter, and thought, which really has big advantages over everything else in the universe. I mean, you can simply become, you know, part of the universe's energy source and travel back and forth on the winds. You don't even need a craft. And imagine you can pretty much build or design or create anything from thought. So I imagine they got some big advantages, but you don't see many of them here. You don't hear about many of them being here. You hear about them sometimes present with the Greys. What I like, is, and I found interesting over the years, is how many of them I've got described as human-looking, meaning in appearance, like two legs, two arms, one head, two ears, but in a completely, like, energy, in an orangish, yellowish, whitish, goldish light. It seems to be tiered, darker from the center, lighter towards the edges. I've heard that at least 100-150 times, but that's all the information we really have. Yeah, go ahead, David.
No, Joe, just what I wanted to point out to you, I wanted really just a question to you. Something I've pondered before, like you're saying about the light beings, you hear reports of them, but I've never seen one.
Yeah.
You say you've never seen one. I've met anybody who says they've seen one that I'm aware of.
I'm with that.
So my point here, my question would be is, you know, if we evolve eventually, and you know, just for speculation's sake, we evolve to a point where we become non-corporeal, we don't need to be physical anymore, how far does a species have to evolve before we're unimportant to them, before they lose interest? You know, why would such beings want to come here or interact with us in any way in the first place? Is it out of obligation or something, or just curiosity? I mean, if they'd already been through this themselves, then why go backwards?
Well, that's a phenomenally damn good question in itself. You know, and it's a tough one, too, because you're right. Why would they want to bother? I mean, in the grand scheme of things to them, we can't be much more than insects, ants. I mean, frankly, if you can travel across galaxies, now we're not talking about just our galaxy, but galaxies with mind and thought, I mean, what are we to them? A mosquito, a flea, a fly? Maybe that they're not so much interested in us, but more interested in, like, the Greys. The Greys are a billion years plus of evolution. They might have an interest in the Greys. They might have an interest in us because the Greys have an interest in us. See, people always make this mistake. We make ourselves self-important. This, and I've said this a lot of times, this may not be as much about us as it is about other species. I mean, we may be part of it, we may be involved in it in some shape, form, or fashion, but there are at least five major species in this thing we talk about on a regular basis, and we're just one of them, and I'm saying major, I don't even think we're a major, but, you know, for the sake of argument, we'll say we are. So the light beings may be more interested in what the Greys are up to, or even maybe what the reptilians or the humans are up to. They're supposed to be around 700-800 million years of evolution there, so they may actually be watching them, and we might just be part. How can I say this? We might just be in the right place at the wrong time, or the wrong place at the right time. You know, just happen to be there when the light beings are present. But I don't really think it's for our benefit. And from most of the contacts I've heard, or most of the reports I've heard, they're usually talking like a recent report just a few months back. A lady's having experiences kind of similar to yours, and she's talking about these really nice human aliens. And she said while she was talking to them, the male alien was portraying something like a lineage or a line of her history back to her. And a light being appeared. But he was interacting with the two humans, not with her. Even though she was kind of could sense what was going on, they were really interacting with the humans and not her. So it might just be that, and we may just assume it's about us. So we got to be careful. You know, that assume word is bad. Bad word, bad word. I'm going to be good now. I'm going back to my corner.
Okay, another question to throw out to the three of you. Which of the three theories do you think is happening the most, extra-dimensional, extraterrestrial, or future humans? Which one do you think is involving themselves in this puny little planet of ours the most?
Ooh, that's a good one. For me, I'd have to say extraterrestrial.
I'm going to go with extra-dimensional. And the reason why is because it could be extraterrestrial operating in extra-dimensional because they've got the technology to use hyperspace. So if you're going to travel from a planet that is in another galaxy, another universe, or wherever it is that they would come from, you know, you're talking about a long distance. I don't think they're, you know, locked up in these frozen little tubes until they get here. So you would have to learn to use hyperspace, the folding of fabric of space, that type of thing, which means they would have also had to have learned how to harness the power of a sun or a star. I think that would be probably the most plausible, you know, coming across the vastness of space, just extraterrestrial. You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, unless there's, it's possible there's some type of technology or something out there that we have just never even thought about that would make that possible.
Or even wormholes, for that matter. They might know how to safely traverse and manufacture wormholes.
What's option number four?
Okay.
Bella put that out. I've been reading. What's he talking about?
Option number four, stepping stones.
You know, oh, from planet to planet? Or?
Well, let's look at this from a realistic point of view, because man's going to be a while before we actually can master anything faster than light. Let's look at our society, how we got where we are. First off, you know, we started off in a little hunk of our planet, and we spread out all over like roaches. We've crossed the oceans. We've gone to the moon. Look, y'all don't even send me things about the moon. We've gone to the moon. That's all I'm saying about it. But for us, it's going to be different. We're going to establish sometime in the next decade, or actually I should say the next 50 years, we're going to establish a presence on Mars. Granted, it won't be a big one, but we will establish one. By the turn of the next century, we'll have a decently sized colony on Mars, and probably one or two bases probably out in the asteroid belt, so we can start doing a little mining, start taking care of advantages of some of the minerals. We'll have a base on the moon because of the helium-3. It's something we can use, and it's a good product for us, and it'll help. As you know, people can forget, and the planet's just going to keep growing. Unless there's a war, we're just going to keep getting bigger in size, so we've got to have room to expand. So we'll be out on Mars. 200-300 years after that, we'll be out near the Oort cloud somewhere. We'll have places probably on Europa and Io, maybe a base around Mars, I mean around Jupiter, and then something out in the Oort cloud. So now we're at the end of our solar system. We're 2 light-years out now because our solar system is 2 light-years across. Or 100,000. It's 100,000. Our solar system is 2 light-years across, but our galaxy is 100,000 light-years across. But anyway, make a long story short, you know, we're 2 years out. From there, we'll probably build a base somewhere between there and Proxima Centauri, which will be about a light year out, about 2 or 3 years of travel, and a ship that does 25 the speed of light, which isn't very fast. After that, we'll stay there for a couple of years. Then we'll build one in Proxima Centauri and find some places around there and build. Now, it's of course 500 years has passed. Remember, we're supposed to live for another 4 billion years, so we're 500 years out. We're now into another solar system. 500 years after that, we'll be into 2 or 3 other solar systems. 10,000 years after that, we'll be halfway across the known galaxy. Within 200,000 years, we will have explored our entire galaxy. At 500,000 years, we would have explored the whole thing twice. In 2 or 3 million years, not only will we have explored it 10 times, but we'll have bases and communities all over the place. So there's no real need for people to come from Earth to one of the other solar systems, because we'll have people closer by. There won't be any need. And as we grow and expand, it'll just keep getting bigger, faster, further out, and more people. Eventually, you don't need it. Half the speed of light is plenty fast enough to explore the entire known galaxy in a couple 100,000 years. I know humans don't want to hear that, but no one stops to think that, yes, the Greys are 1 billion-plus years old. They could have explored this galaxy hundreds of times, thousands of times. They could have bases and facilities all day. They could actually numbers in the hundreds of trillions, which is where they expect us to be. Go ahead.
Hey, Joe. I just wanted to throw out this one thought here. What if, if there are beings out there that are amongst the oldest in the created universe, instead of planet hopping, maybe there's a species out there that actually can be galaxy hopping.
They probably are.
Actually learn how to traverse these massive distances of space. Okay, what's that?
Demi, what are you playing with? We know Demi's a bad one now.
Oh, it sounded like pipe organ to me.
I know, it was weird.
David, that's a very good thought. I mean, who's to say that these visitors are necessarily from the Milky Way galaxy? As far as we know, they could be from the Andromeda galaxy.
Well, what's the one that just collided with us? That's probably where they're from. Let's look at it like this. Either us or them are from that galaxy that collided with the Milky Way. What is it, Sagittarius? They think Earth actually came from that galaxy. And it's not a, it's not naturally from the Milky Way. It's actually from the other galaxy. They're actually at least four dozen peer-reviewed evidence out there right now. So anyway, we got the one going through the middle of ours. It's a good chance they could be from there. We could be from there. Actually, read up on it, Rydell. There's a the Earth, the Sagittarius dwarf. Yeah, we've been colliding with a galaxy for quite some time now, for a very long time. They also gave just recently, NASA, the European Space Agency, and two other agencies just gave it credit for heating up the planets. Yeah, across the known solar system. Yeah, because all the planets in our solar system are rising in temperature, not just Earth. So they're giving it credit for doing that. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of planets in there. There's a lot of solar systems in there. No, it's Sagittarius. It's not Andromeda. Andromeda is a whole other big galaxy. This is like a dwarf galaxy. It's a mini galaxy. But, yeah, it's Clyde. You can see it. It's showing it. You can watch it. It's going to be doing it for another, what, 700, 800 million years as the Milky Way absorbs everything into it. So we don't know. As far as we know, the Greys could be from that galaxy. We could be from that galaxy. We don't know. We're not, well, we're infants. We haven't even got out the womb yet. Well, about 30 of us have got out the womb. Whoever made it to space or to the moon has got out of the womb. Other than that, the rest of us are still stuck down here in terra firma inside the womb going, yeah, we know a lot when we really don't know. It's kind of like when you're 18 and when you're 50. You know, at 18 you think you know everything, and at 50 you realize, shit, I still don't know anything.
hey, now, Joe, this is G-rated. Come on.
Oh, that's right. I apologize. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, Jeff, or David.
Yes, sir. Deacon, I'd like to ask a question of Demi, November, excuse me.
Okay.
If you would. You know, you get the skeptics who always say, well, extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional, doesn't matter. We're this ass-backwards little planet. Why would anybody want to come here? But I think the fact still remains, and yes, I do think it's a fact, they still do come here.
Yep.
And this looking at why, that's why I wrote that article a while about the open letter to abductees, about doing medical testing on abductees. Maybe looking at the side aspects of what's going on might lead to a reason. You know, looking at the effect might give you the answer of why the cause is there. Jimmy, what do you think? Why do you think they're coming here?
Oh, why not? I could be wrong. David, I could be wrong. I want to think that curiosity, exploration, all those types of things might be inherent. You never know what you're going to find under a rock, what use it might be, you know, how it could advance you, how it could tell you a story, all those types of things. You know, we are fascinating.
Let me jump in here with that, then. I agree with you. But then again, throw in this little aspect of it. You've got reports of gray-type ETs that may go back hundreds, if not thousands of years in our history. So once they came here and checked us out a little while, why keep coming back?
Yeah. Well, maybe they're waiting for something to happen. Maybe they know what's going to happen in our future, and they're looking for that spark. Maybe they're watching evolution. I mean, how cool would it be to see a species evolve? And they're looking for that little spark that shows them that it's something's changing. I mean, we can have things like spontaneous evolution. I can think of probably all kinds of reasons of why somebody else would want to look at a study of what maybe something happens within their own species. You know, maybe they don't want to be these skinny little gray things anymore, and they want to biologically change themselves into something else. Or maybe there's a planet that they want to colonize, and because of their particular structure, they need... You know, I mean, I'm just throwing out just ideas. Some of them could just sound wild and crazy. But, I mean, if we know they're here and people are having experiences, there has to be a reason. The only way we can reason what the reason would be is from our own human perspective. So, I don't know. That's why. I don't buy into the thing, why would somebody want to come here? You know, as an idea that it's not happening. It just doesn't even work for me. It doesn't make sense.
Well said.
You know, this line of discussion, it keeps this one line from H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds running through my head. They're watching us like a man looking through a microscope at the life that forms and multiplies in a single drop of water. If you really look at it in that kind of a metaphor, this planet is just a little tiny drop of water in this, just this galaxy alone, let alone the universe. Mm.
It's a good point. It's not even a grand a saying on a beach. It's like a 0.0001 grand a saying on beach compared to the universe, to the galaxy. That's an interesting thought, though. I've always wondered about that. If I was cruising through a spaceship and all of a sudden I seen this big blue or green planet, I'd have to stop and check it out. I would. And I do think some of these aliens originally may have came here because of exploration. Either that or the Mars theory, one or the other. But why they stayed and what they're up to, that's a whole other thing. Because, 6,000, 10,000, 25,000, best we can tell, 50,000 years. And I don't want to say interfering in our culture, but in a way they do. If you've been taken, it's interfered with you. It's changed who you really are. It's given you a different outlook on life. It makes you think differently. So in that aspect, they're changing society. And I know people like to argue about how many contactees there really are. And at this point, it's just guesses. But if they've been here 50,000 years, even if they only started with 50 contactees, that makes it more than a third of the population, guys. If they started out with several thousand, it's good chance that a bunch of us are related to them in some shape, form, or fashion. It's not that they got to abduct everybody; they just the ones that they need, that they're looking for. And to that person, yeah.
We've got, let's see, about
7 minutes.
7 minutes. I'm going to ask I'll start with Demi for ladies first. Or excuse me, November. Gosh, like I said, you're going to have to beat me overhead.
Just call
her. That's okay.
Frank.
That's all right.
gosh, we've known each other for so long and known each other mostly by our nicknames. But any last comments before we go on this whole topic altogether?
Okay, last topic. I'll pick a word from the virtual auditorium, insignificant. The idea that humans are insignificant to me is just ludicrous. If we went to, I have no idea where that came from. I think it's somebody trying to send a signal from Mars. I'll answer it in a little bit. Anyways, if we think about insignificance, if we went to Europa and we got through the ice and we found just a little bitty microbe, and all you can see this microbe is underneath a microscope, that would be profound. It would be so profound that, it would change the way that we view the universe. So the idea that a human being would be insignificant, it doesn't make sense. So I don't like the idea of humans being insignificant. and maybe they are, but, I don't have to believe that. And I can use the word believe in that statement.
Well, I'd like to answer something that you asked November and Joe a little while ago. A lot of people might get on me for this, but in all of this, I think it could be all of the above, or the extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional, time travelers, whatever. But I lean towards the extraterrestrial hypothesis mainly because of all of the physicality, the physical-related things that their presence shows, in abductions, in their craft leave traces. We pick them up on radar. They're seen coming from deep space. Now, this does not mean to me, though, that they haven't learned how to pop in and out of this reality as part of their time travel, or they're not time travel, their method of propulsion or whatever. But I think more of the evidence does support an extraterrestrial origin, but then again, that's just me.
Hey, where'd y'all go?
We're waiting for you, Joe.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I was typing something into the room when y'all said that. But anyway, that's no. D set a new record tonight at 101,070.
Woohoo!
And I was getting ready to type in the room, and I was like, wow, I got quiet all of a sudden. What the hell happened? Actually, guys, I think I'm real happy with a lot of things. I think ET is here to observe and watch and learn and change. And I think in a lot of ways they're just like us. They're inquisitive and they want to know things, and they have tempers and they have feelings, they have emotions. Sometimes they may not be intensified, and sometimes we don't understand why they want to pick on particular people. But I got to be honest with you. First off, I haven't seen them do anything that we haven't done to ourselves, which doesn't mean they're right or they're wrong. I really haven't. And most of the time, and another thing is, I don't know any contactees, and I can honestly say this, and I know really a lot of contactees. I'd be amazed at how many thousands of contactees that we were in touch with. I don't know any of them that want their experiences to stop. They may want them to change, and they may fear, even the people in their 20s who are going through some rather harsh stuff, even they, really, they'll start to miss them. And you can say it's this syndrome or that syndrome, and you may be right early on, but for people at my age, no. I get aggravated when I don't see them enough. It changes my moods and my temperament. I expect X amount of contact now, and I expect to learn certain things. And I got to say, in a lot of ways, they've helped me. They've helped me not kill all the PL and Lers to start off with, so that's a good thing right there, isn't it? I couldn't resist. In case y'all don't know what PL and Lers are, peace, love, and lighters, yes. You bunch of crazy people.
Lost you, D.
Oh, that was weird.
We lost the host. Can I say something on the host?
We lost the host.
Oh, well, the host is...
Can I say something for her? I want to tell her congratulations. This is a record-breaking show for her. And being a host myself, I know how much work you put into this, and I want to congratulate you for a job well done.
I'll plow to her because she can't hear her. Well, you can hear? Okay, she did hear you, but she can't talk. There's nothing coming through. You want me to read the thing?
That's weird. I can barely hear her, but I can't hear her. Oh, I might hear her coming through yours. That's what it is. I think I hear her coming through David's. No, we only got 2 minutes anyway.
Okay, Z asked me to do this for us. We're getting close enough now, if you guys don't mind. It's been a great discussion tonight, and I want to thank both of you, November and Joe, for appearing with me on D's show. Dee just did have her 3-year anniversary of being on the air probably a week or two ago, and once again, we did hit a record tonight, hon. Very good. Way to go. So we'd like to say thank you to all those who joined us in the Power Pop Auditorium and all the others who've listened. Stay tuned for Voice of the People, hosted by November Hansen. Our guest this evening is David Zimmerman. We'd also like to let you know there will be no live broadcast next Saturday of Eye to the Sky because Dee and I will be taking a much overdue vacation to spend time with family. There are several exciting shows coming up after that. Starting on September the 11th, the guest will be Robert Salas. On September 18th, the guest will be Robert Hastings. And on September 25th, the guest will be John Venture. So we do hope you'll join Dee for these upcoming shows. And until then, keep it at Eye to the Sky, and good night, everyone.
Let's drop out of there. Oh, wait, I got to drop y'all out of here. Hold on.
All through a standing in line, the clubs I'll never get in. It's like the bottom of the ninth, and I'm never going to win this. Life hasn't turned out quite the way I want it to be.
Tell me what you want.
I want a brand new house on an episode of Cribs and a bathroom I can play baseball in and a king size tub big enough for 10 plus me.
What you need?
I'll need a credit card that's got no limit and a big black chain with a bedroom in it. Gonna join the Mile High Club at 37,000 feet.